I played a cut from Tammy Duckworth, who was on Jake Tapper's show last week. She was talking about the immigration issues there, but she was also asked the question of whether the Democratic Party may be moving too far to the left after Democratic voters in New York embraced a 28-year-old Latina Democratic socialist over a 10-year veteran congressional incumbent. Here's what Tammy Duckworth had to say.
You can't win the White House without the Midwest, and I don't think that you can go too far to the left and still win the Midwest. Coming from a Midwestern state, I think you need to be able to talk to the industrial Midwest. You need to listen to the people there and in order to win an election nationwide.
And that's Tammy Duckworth speaking with Jake Tapper last Sunday. Joining me now here in the Allstate Skyline studio is Pat Brady. Pat's the former head of the state Republican Party. He's also the founder of Next Generation Strategies. Pat, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, it's great to be here. Beautiful morning, huh?
Isn't it great to wake up to this beautiful skyline here?
You know, the thing is, I noticed on the walk cut across the loop, the economy must be doing well because the beer bottles that were left on the bridges are all pretty high in beer.
Really?
Yeah,
wow,
no
okay.
cheap stuff.
Well,
so things are good.
And that's good for sales taxes, too. Well, thanks again for getting up with me. And I want to ask you about what Tammy Duckworth said, because, you know, as much as people are looking at the Republicans, and there are issues there, but this continued kind of festering divide within the Democratic Party, that doesn't help them.
No, and we've been talking about this for a long time. It's just more acute with the Republicans because we have the presidency and the president who's very visible. We've had a lot of these debates publicly as Republicans. I mean, Democrats have been struggling with this for a while, but I agree with Senator Duckworth that you can't go too far to the left and win in the Midwest. I do think, though, that New York win for that young woman who was very far to the left, it's basically socialist.
She is a Democratic socialist party member.
I think that's more of an outlier. And if you look at the races, the 15 or 16 races that are really going to make or break who takes over the House, those are more centrist Democrats than she might be. So I agree completely that they're getting yanked to the left. Like the Republicans, to a certain respect, are getting yanked to the right. But the difference is President Trump has been able to appeal to those Midwest more conservative Democrats and Republicans, and that's what got them elected.
Well, and two, when you look at things like, I mean, as much as you talk about Tammy Duckworth and the Midwest, I mean, still the Democratic primary in the state was very close.
Very close, and the energy in that, our Democratic governor primary, is what you're talking about?
I'm talking about the Democratic presidential primary.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders was very close.
Very close, and if you saw the, in the governor primary, even though J.B. Pritzker won by a healthy margin, there was a lot of energy with a guy like Dan Biss, who won some of those downstate counties that are traditionally more conservative Democrats, and even the messages of Kennedy and Biss were much more progressive than J.B. Pritzker's was. So there's a lot, that's where the energy in the party is, and certainly here in Illinois.
And so it's a matter of how Democrats try to find their unity, Republicans struggling to find their unity in this state.
Yeah, I think in the last couple months, the governor's had a good 6 or 7 weeks. I think you're seeing after a pretty messy primary that a lot of the people that were at odds with each other have come together. And the governor has had a good 5 or 6 weeks. We got a budget. We got the GNS decision, school funding reform bill now actually in place. So I think he's had a good 5 or 6 weeks, and a lot of people are more optimistic than they might have been in March about what might happen in November.
Although there have been missteps along the way.
Sure.
I mean,
there always is.
the comments about Champaign-Urbana, for example.
Yeah, that was on a Roe podcast, and I listened to it with John Cass last week. And if you actually listen to what he's saying, I grew up downstate.
Right.
And I love it. I know it very, very well. And what he was saying was actually there is some truth to it. Not that Champaign, Bloomington, and downstate communities aren't great places to be. And I get the political environment where something like he says gets blown up. But there are a lot of reasons why people might want to live up here versus down in Champaign just because of the, for a lot of reasons. But that doesn't mean that Champaign's not a great place to live. And that was a kind of an unfortunate moment. And Governor Ron went down and apologized, and hopefully the people aren't upset about it.
I do have to admit, I did like Representative Carol Ammon's picture tweet of the governor on the bus saying, "I remember my first bus ride." It was,
Well, you know, I've yet to see J.B. Pritzker on any public transport. Maybe his first jet ride, but not private jet ride.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this budding race, okay? I mean, we've got, it's toilets and taxes. And is that just going to be the game from here on to November?
Maybe, but I'd rather be someone that's talking about tax reform and reduction than talking about rigging your property taxes on your second Esther Street mansion. And I think what's happened in the last 6 or 7 weeks, and believe me, on primary night when I watched the speeches, I thought, man, we've got an uphill climb as Republicans. But governor's had a good 5-6 weeks talking taxes, corruption, jobs, and a lot of Democrats even are wondering, why is J.B. Pritzker even running? I don't know what his message is. And the message right now is he rigged his ripped toilets out of his second Astor Street mansion so he could skirt on $250,000 in taxes. And that's a bad message, particularly downstate.
Well, and I mean, I think what's curious here is, and of course, as we know in politics, everything old is new again.
Right.
And
like you and me.
Yeah, right. But, you had to go there, didn't you? But we're, for example, this issue had been out there before.
Oh, I did the press conference.
And yes, you
it
were,
was in
right,
May.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And, but I mean, so it
May, I'm sorry, of 17.
Right. So there was, I mean, there was ample opportunity to try to, for the Pritzker camp to kind of respond and or, you know, clean it up.
And that's my point. Even their response didn't clean it up because there is no response. What to me is, before you run and you have that kind of money, you have oppo people looking at everything you've ever done and make sure you've got that covered. And there was no response. In fact, even during the I think the best thing that happened to J.B. Pritzker on this issue is that Berrios lost, because this issue would have been even more prominent. I still think this is the biggest issue in the campaign, our property taxes. People are just fed up. And now we have the Democratic nominee who rigged his property taxes to avoid it. Not just that, he's a multi-billionaire, and the rest of us are picking up the tab. That's a pretty potent issue. Back to your point, is this going to be about taxes and toilets? It may well be, and that toilet issue might sink you.
But when the governor talks about property taxes, he also has delivered kind of a mixed message on this. Because, I mean, it's very plain, you know, we should freeze them, even try to cut them.
Right.
But then when it comes to actual procedural things, he's advocated positions that ostensibly would add to property tax burden, like shifting pension costs over to local school districts. You know, trying, and obviously, you know, looking at a way to reduce state taxes.
Right.
But it's not going to change the universe, and it's going to fall, you're going to pay for it out of one pocket or the other.
Yeah, but I think the overall message is we need more taxpayers, not more taxes. And however, and there are all kinds of proposals out there, and it all ties to the big pension debt, which is the elephant in the room. But at least Governor Rauner is speaking of reforms and changes, whereas J.B. Pritzker, I haven't really heard him say anything other than a progressive income tax, which requires us to change the Constitution. And to me, and a lot of people, that's a tax increase. I mean, he hasn't even given the details on that. So that, I guess that's my point. I still don't know, and I think a lot of people, even Democrats, are wondering, why are you even running? You may have a lot of issues with Governor Rauner on his agenda or how he's tried to implement it, but at least he has an agenda. So far, J.B. Pritzker, his only agenda is, I'm going to protect our values. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Well, I mean, and obviously there is the issue of, you know, the Donald Trump in this whole contest.
But interestingly, and I'm looking at this realistically, that this, it's always an uphill climb for us to win in this state, but we can do it if we're unified. But Donald Trump now is about 48% nationally, where he was in the low 40s, maybe high 30s, and after the March primary. And he's kind of a double-edged sword in this state. He actually helps Republicans sitting south of I-80, maybe south of I-74. He's pretty popular down there. He's not popular up here, but he's popular, I mean, north of I-80 in Chicago and the six big counties, but he's pretty popular downstate.
Yeah, but are there enough votes?
Well, again, it all depends on who turns out, as it always does. And the energy, is, as we said earlier, to me in the Democratic Party is with the progressives. And I'm not sure if they're fired up about the insider billionaire, as they might have been about a Dan Biss or a Chris Kennedy.
We're speaking to Pat Brady, former head of the state Republican Party and founder of Next Generation Strategies. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Smith. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River on Upper Wacker Drive. And joining me here in studio is Pat Brady, founder of Next Generation Strategies. We're talking about the governor's race a little bit. I'm curious about one issue. And I noticed that the governor has put this on his list of accomplishments, is the fact that in the recently passed and approved budget was $53 million in capital spending to deal with the Quincy Veterans Home. And to me, that whole issue of Quincy, I think, it represents a significant challenge for the governor.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, and there were so many competing interests down there, and the issue, unfortunately, on both sides got really politicized, and we're talking about veterans and the people that we should take care of the most and make sure that they're healthy and happy. But yeah, that could be, they could make an issue of that, but I do think even at one point, Senator Durbin went down there early on and said, hey, the governor's pretty much doing everything he can, but I do, there might be some vulnerability there, but he put Mike Hoffman down there to make sure the job's done right. And I think there are other issues that are going to be more important, but I'm sure that issue will come up in the campaign.
Well, to me, it seems like a touchstone type political issue.
I think the Democrats have tried to make it that, but I think if you talk to a lot of people, they're not as tuned into it as there might be the people that are reading the blogs every day.
True. But then there's always the advertising to come. And
yeah, but there's a risk, and I think for the Democrats in politicizing that issue, I think that could really backfire on you if you go too far with it. There are other issues I think people are more concerned with, even though that's a huge issue and a terrible thing for the veterans. But I think there are a lot of things that the governor did that if they do make an issue, he can talk about that I think are going to shed a lot of light on it that people don't really know right now.
What?
I think he played it right, is just get down there and take care of it, and I think he has. And Mike Hoffman's one of the finest people that the governor's had in his administration. I think that money being there will all be taken care of. Remember in Quincy, they didn't want that removed. They were talking about pulling it out, and the people that lived down there didn't want to pull it out.
Understood, but you're also talking about 3 years of, from the initial outbreak to money being done to fix it. You're talking about 2015.
Oh, we didn't have a budget for 2 years, so.
Okay, but still,
yeah.
I mean...
Listen, could they make an issue of it? Yeah, but I think there's some danger in doing that, and I think more important to me is that the issue has been taken care of, and hopefully we won't see any more of that again, just for the veterans' sake.
Sam McCann, on the ballot, does he present a serious risk to the governor?
You know this as well as anybody, I have never seen anybody accurately predict the impact of a third-party candidate. And we've seen this in election after election after election. Now, the conventional wisdom is he's going to be the conservative party. That's going to take away from Governor Rauner. But I could see, having grown up downstate and very familiar with that part of the state, there are a lot of conservative Democrats that aren't going to be thrilled with insider J.B. Pritzker, who are as conservative as some Republicans who might say, hey, this is a labor guy, much more so than J.B.'s ever.
Well, that's
been.
What I mean. He presents this kind of unique...
Yeah.
Animal, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, he could draw more from JB than he would from Governor Rauner.
I mean, pro-labor social conservative.
Absolutely.
That's broader than just, I think, what we saw in the Republican primary from Jeannie Ives.
Exactly. That's my point. We don't know what's... to answer your question, I don't think anybody really knows what impact it's going to have. But, you know, with Sam McCann... Not a household name.
Well, and that's the thing, is what kind of juice is going to be behind him, you know?
I can't see who would get behind him. I mean, money-wise?
Yes.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of money behind him.
I mean, we've seen a little bit from the operating engineers at 150,
right.
I think.
Okay, so he's a labor guy, so that's not going to help him with the downstate Republicans necessarily. It helps him with downstate Democrats. But I don't think on the Republican side, some of the traditional money sources that might go outside the Governor Rauner are going to get involved with that. And there aren't that many there. So I'm not sure who's going to fund it. But you can't just, we're pretty close to the election data to build name ID, which he has none of, really.
I want to switch gears a little bit. You were a former federal prosecutor. We've got the big announcement coming up from the president tomorrow night, picking the replacement for Anthony Kennedy. We were talking off the air. Guess what? It's going to be conservative, right?
Yeah. I hope it's a conservative, more like a Gorsuch that's just strictly interpreting the Constitution and apply the Constitution. But it will be a conservative. And the Democrats, this is one of those things, if you're irritated with the Democratic Party, for a lot of reasons, you'd be really irritated with this, because the change in the rules in the Senate to allow 51 votes to the Supreme Court nominee to get through, and the fact that you lost the presidency in the Senate and the House, or the Senate most importantly, we're going to have another conservative justice. However that fits in the conservative bandwidth, and we're going to have a conservative court for a long, long time.
Well, and it's not just even at the Supreme Court level. We're also looking, you know, down the list, too.
Oh, it goes down to the district.
But as far as how this has, you know, an impact for several years in the future.
Remember, President Obama said famously, elections have consequences. this is what happens when you win. But it will be conservative. The difference, I think, a little bit in this selection process is there are actually farm players identifiable by the conservative groups that sign up for certain candidates, that these people are historically very...
you have the Federalist Society.
Right, which we didn't really have. You have people that you've watched for more than a couple of years, watch their voting records and see that you don't tend not to get as many surprises like a Souter or some of those people that kind of come off the reservation, even back to the Eisenhower days where they come off the reservation a little bit. So it'll be a conservative. I hope it's someone that can get through without a big battle that will hurt the party and the country.
And we have a Chicago Seventh Circuit judge who is on the list.
Yeah, Judge Justice Barrett Young would be on the court for a long, long time, just barely on the Court of Appeals, so she doesn't have a long history of deciding cases. I'm not sure if she's the front runner anymore.
Well, and of course, her nomination, there was the great controversy that was evoked. I believe it was Dianne Feinstein that raised issues about her religious beliefs.
That's a no-no in a country that fought a revolution so you could believe how you like. So I like Dianne Feinstein. I think she's one of the smartest people in the Senate, but that backfired on her. And if they bring that argument up again, I think it will backfire. That will not play well with any sector, I don't think, of this country, maybe a small sector of the progressive wing, to attack somebody's religious beliefs.
Democrats obviously want to put up a fight, but it doesn't work numbers.
They don't have any ammo. Right. You're right.
You don't know who it is.
Yeah.
I mean, even as Susan Collins said, and even though she's positioned herself that, she wants somebody that's going to uphold Roe, but they don't have the numbers. And then you start looking at some of those Democratic senators in traditionally
Manchin
red states.
Yeah.
It seems like there's no way really for them to stop this.
Unless something really blows up, but you got to give President Trump credit. He's pretty savvy with these kind of things, and they actually work out pretty well for him. So the people that I've seen on the list, I think, are people that should pass. But it's been interesting to watch how the Democrats have framed this, as this is all about Roe v. Wade, and that's going to be the litmus test for this candidate. And the Republicans, their position has been, we're going to support somebody that supports the Latin term of stare decisis, means respect for precedent. And I think if you give that answer, that I respect the precedent of the court, that'll get you over that hump as the nominee.
Although, as we just saw with the Janus decision, that meant nothing. 41 years old.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, obviously the majority ruling was that, you know, that was an outdated...
Right. It was facts on the ground. Honestly, if you read that, as I know you have, if that weren't an Illinois case, I'm not sure if it goes that way, the way that the court decided it, because they did cite the facts on the ground are just different, though there's not so much diversity in the unions. It's controlled by Warner, you know, very strong unions.
And also even to the point of, you know, noting Illinois' financial crisis.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
It's like the court talks about it in the decision. But listen, on the other side...
I was going to say, Illinois was not exactly... I've said this to friends. I said Illinois was not exactly the poster child to bring this to the court.
No, but the facts on the ground might have made a difference in the court's decision. But anyway, we talked about this on the Cochran. It was a First Amendment analysis,
right.
and applying the First Amendment analysis to the law here that got it where it is. But that is I'd like to talk to you about this too. I think long run, that's a big win for Governor Rauner. Now we talked Thursday, that might be a political mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, is this something that is on the conservative, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, seriously, I don't know that I have that appreciation of it as far as a major checklist kind of thing for conservatives.
Well, look at who stood on the Supreme Court's steps the day of the decision. It was Governor Rauner and John Tillman from the Illinois Policy Institute.
Yeah, a couple.
Get along during the primary, and that's part of the unification, or I think unifying the Republican Party behind Governor Rauner. I think Janus went a long way to doing that. In addition to, the reality is when we talked on Thursday, I had kind of a different view of this, but when I saw the editorial boards across the state come out and say, labor union leaders, you did this to yourself. Had you played ball at all, we might not have had a Janus decision, but your unwillingness to bend on anything, I think, led to this lawsuit being filed and the decision that came down. And Governor Rauner has worked out deals with some 22 unions. AFSCME is the only one that won't deal. And I think that's the point of the editorials. I think people now understand that maybe this labor union was a little out of control in its demands, not necessarily representing the interests of its membership, but it's for its own survival. And they weren't willing to, you know, these are tax dollars that pay these employees, and then maybe they went a little too far in what they were trying to do, and that's what happened.
Well, we're going to speak in the next hour to Robert Bruno from the University of Illinois and a labor expert there, and talk to kind of dive into the issue and look at what the future may be.
What do you think? We talked quickly about this Thursday. How's the politics shake out, you think?
How does the politics of it shake out?
Yeah.
I do think in some cases there is an energizing effect.
For the Democrats.
For Democrats, yeah. On that. But overall, who knows where it falls into the checklist. But the fact that labor being such a major part of the Democratic constituency, I think there's more of a necessarily impact there than conservatives versus going, siding with Rauner on it. That's just how I see it.
It's never boring here, is it?
There's always something, right? Pat Brady, founder of Next Generation Strategies, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good to see you guys. Thanks.